The views and opinions expressed by individuals on the following program do not necessarily reflect those of the network, Guys Guy Radio, and its platforms.
It's Guys Guy Radio. Here's your host, Robert Manny.
Welcome to Guys Guys Radio. This is your host, Robert Manny, welcoming you to the show where men and women can be at their best and everyone wins, Guys Guys Radio. We're here to inform you, inspire you, empower you, and get you to think, feel, and who knows, maybe even act by virtue of the journeys, stories, experiences, and insights of the guests I bring you each and every week to the show. Once again, this week is no exception. This is our 700th episode of Guys Guys Radio, and today we're going to talk about conversations with God, with the one and only, and by the way, a return guest to Guys Radio, and one of my first really big guests, Neil Donald Walsh, who's written the Conversations with God series. He's got a new book out called Letters to a Young Seeker, Departing Thoughts from an Elder, that we're going to get into also. It's 21 chapters, 21 lessons for young people, and it's amazing, and it's got a poem written by his wife at the end of each chapter, and I think it's just an incredible teaching tool for spirituality for young folks, and it's just amazing. I'm getting a copy for my son, and I really enjoyed reading it. But we're going to get into Neil's story and a lot more today on Guys Guys Radio, because you know what? Suppose you could ask God the most puzzling questions about existence, questions about love and faith and life and death and good and evil, and suppose God provided clear, undeniable, and understandable answers. Well, that's exactly what happened with our guest, Neil Donald Walsh, and it can happen to you. And we're about to have a conversation with Neil Donald Walsh right here on Guys Guys Radio, our 700th episode.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, Guys Guys Radio, it is the interview portion of our show, and I am delighted to welcome back my kind of first big, I'll put it in quotes, guest that I ever had on Guys Guys Radio 699 shows ago, and that is Neil Donald Walsh. Let me tell you a little bit about him. His work has influenced millions of people around the world, helped redefine how we think about God, consciousness, and our relationship with life itself. Neil is the author of the groundbreaking Conversations with God series, a collection of books that began as a personal dialogue and grew into a global spiritual conversation. His writing invites us to question old beliefs, explore new ideas about divinity, and live with greater awareness and responsibility. His latest book is called Letters to a Young Seeker, Departing Thoughts from an Elder, a reflective and deeply human work offering insight, guidance, and perspective for those navigating life's big questions. And today we're going to talk about where these ideas came from, how they've evolved, and what they mean for us right now as individuals, as men and women, and as a world in transition. Neil Donald Walsh, welcome back to Guys Guys Radio.
Thank you, my friend. It's lovely to be here with you. How may I be of service?
Well, let's just have a conversation. We'll help our listeners and viewers out there in terms of wrestling with some of the spiritual questions that they may have with everything going on today. So let's start off at the beginning. The Conversations with God series, for those who may not be aware, began as a very personal experience. How did that first conversation come about? And then we'll jump far ahead from there. But I think people need to know how you got the initial energy, if you will, from source to be able to have this open communication on a regular basis.
Well, gosh, I had gone through a very difficult period of time in my life, Robert. In fact, it was probably the worst 10 days of my life in terms of things that were occurring. At the beginning of that period, my former wife, still a good friend of mine, but we chose to dissolve our relationship as a marriage. We kept our relationship as close friends and co-parents. But, you know, we just parted company. We just realized it wasn't working out the way we had both hoped. So it was an amicable parting. And I agreed to just, I said, hey, I'll find a little apartment someplace and we can both be with these kids, and it'll all work out just fine. But you know what? 5 days after my marriage ended, I was released from my job. I lost my job. The corporation I worked for downsized, and I was the last person they hired. So I was the first person they let go because of seniority rules. So I was gone. So now I was out of my relationship and out of my work in the same 5 day period. But you know, I wasn't worried because I got a great letter of recommendation from my former boss, who said he hated to lose me, but seniority, blah, blah, blah. So I was going to a job interview and I was certain I was going to get this new job. Robert, I never made it to the interview. An elderly man made a left turn in front of my car as I was driving there, and he totaled my car. I had a terrible automobile accident. I broke my neck in the automobile accident. They rushed me to the hospital, of course. And when I got there, they put me under, you know what they do. And when they woke me up from the anesthesia, the doctor said, you know, most people, you had a 3/4 inch avulsion fracture of the seventh cervical vertebrae posteriorly. That's, you didn't have a hairline fracture, Neil. You had a 3/4 inch break in your neck. He said people who have a break in their neck large enough to put a pencil through usually die because of spinal cord complications. He said, you managed to survive. Not only did you not die, you're not even paralyzed. He said, it's a miracle. I've never seen anything like this. So he said, he looked over me. I was lying on the table and he said, what do you intend to do with the rest of your life? Because you've been given an incredible gift. You shouldn't even be here. So, you know, I thought about that for a while, but I couldn't get a job anywhere, Robert, because they gave me what they call a Philadelphia collar. It's a plastic collar that holds your head up. And the doctor said, you're not to take this off for any reason. I don't care. You're going to wear it in the shower. He said, I don't care what you're doing. Do not take this because it's the only thing holding your head up. So I said, okay, I won't take it off. Well, you know, I went into job interviews and nobody would hire me. Because finally the seventh guy that interviewed me said, Mr. Walsh, I gotta be honest with you. We'd hire you in 30 seconds if you didn't have that thing around your neck. But obviously you have an impairment and one wrong move on the job while you're wearing that thing, and we're paying your hospital bills, your medical bills for the next 10 years. We can't have that. We'll hire you when you're in, you know, totally healed again. Come back to us. I couldn't find a job anywhere. I was out of work. I wound up having to live on the street because the guy who rented me the little apartment that I was leasing said, you know, you got to pay the rent. I couldn't pay the rent. I told my, I'm sure I'll get a job somewhere. Give me a couple of months. So the guy was good enough to give me 3 months without paying the rent. But he finally said, I got to ask you to leave. I can't do this. Robert, I wound up living on the sidewalk. I was what we call a street person, sleeping on the ground, lying there in the rain, in the cold, in the snow, going from person to person with my hand out, asking for a few coins so that I could eat that day. It was an interesting way to live, and I lived that way for a year. Finally, after 1 year, I got a little part-time job. I'm still wearing the collar. I had to wear it 18 months. But I did get a little part-time job somewhere, just enough to afford a little apartment over somebody's garage. And at least I was out of the rain, out of the weather, and it had a bathroom and everything. Oh my God. So I was able to live a normal life again. And that's when I woke up one night in the middle of the night and I asked God, what have I done to deserve a life of such continuing struggle, one thing after another? And I heard a voice in my head. He said, do you really want answers to those questions? Or are you just venting? And I'm listening to this voice, and I said to myself, yeah, I am venting. But if you got answers, I'd sure as hell like to know what they are. And the voice said to me, Neil, you are sure as hell. about a lot of things, but wouldn't you rather be sure as heaven? And I thought, okay, what's that supposed to mean? And the voice in my head said, take this down. And it answered every question that I was asking. And of course, the answers brought up other questions, which brought up other answers, which brought up other questions. And before I knew it, I was having an on-paper dialogue. And the information that I was receiving was so astonishing to me and felt so accurate. I mean, it felt like it was right on the topic in a profound way, profound answers that I thought, I must be talking to God. I never intended to write a book. Robert, you have to understand that I was never even thinking about turning it into a book. But I was told in the conversation, Neil, you will make of this one day a book, and it will be accessed by many people. And I thought, many people, nobody's going to even publish a book because a guy claims to be talking to God. Come on, it's not going to happen. So you know what? I sent my handwritten notes. I had my handwritten notes Xeroxed and sent them off to a couple of publishers just to see what would happen. I thought I'm going to test this out because if this really is a conversation with a higher authority, the prediction is going to come true. But I thought there's no chance in the world. Nobody's going to publish this book. But a publisher called me. It wasn't one of the major publishers, you know, like Putnam or Random House, but it was a small independent publisher. And they said, we want to put this book out. I said, you're kidding me. He said, no, it's a great work of fiction about a guy who has an argument with God. I said, hey, this is not a work of fiction. He said, are you trying to tell me that you think this actually happened to you? I said, yes. That's why I sent it to you. He said, well, okay, we'll put it out. It's fascinating material. We'll put it out as a nonfiction book. But he said, it's not going to find 500 readers. Nobody's going to rush to the store and buy a book because a guy up in Oregon in the USA claims to be talking to God. Come on. But we'll put it out, you know, it's just to see what happens. And he was right. He was totally correct. The book did not find 500 readers. It found 5 million. Not bragging. I'm not bragging. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened. That's the long answer to your short question.
And then a whole series came out of that. Did Spirit, if you will, contact you and say, Neil, ready for another book? Or how did the series come about?
Well, I got a call from the publisher.
Okay.
Who said, you know, we 5 million copies of this book have been read by people. It's been translated into 37 languages. Do you have any more like that? You know, kind of the old question. Are there
right. What else
any,
you got?
Any sisters like that at home? And I said, well, you know, I've continued to have the conversation. I wasn't trying to write a book, but I've continued to have the experience. And the publisher said, please send us whatever you have. So I said, fair enough. So I sent him a few more pages of my conversation, which became what was then known as book number two. And this went on as long as I had the conversation. And so it wound up producing 9 books, 3,000 pages in what I call the dialogue series.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely amazing. And your latest book is called Letters to a Young Seeker, The Parting Thoughts from an Elder. So let's go back to the conversations for a moment with some of the things that came out of that kind of break with the tradition of how people see God and religion, quote unquote, if you will. One of the things you say is that Earth is not a school. Could you talk about that a little bit? Because a lot of people think, oh, we're here to learn. It's a school.
Yeah, well, God said to me, again, my experience is that God said to me, Neil, really, if I am the supreme being, if I'm a deity, would I send my creations to the physical realm and say, good luck, I hope you learn what you need to learn, because if you don't learn what you need to learn, you're going to have a really tough time. Is this what I would do to my own creations? Would you do that with your own children? Just send them into the world and say, well, good luck. Or would you give them all the equipment you could possibly give them, share with them all the knowledge you could possibly share with them, and give them what they need to have in order to be successful in their life? So God said, life is not a school. You're not there to learn anything. The process is one of simply remembering what it is I've already implanted within you. And call it forth from inside of you, because each of you is an individual expression of the divine. Each of you, every one of your souls already contains all the information you need to do the process that you went there to the physical realm to do, which is evolution. So trust yourself, trust your inner guidance. So I said, okay, fair enough. And that's why I've come to the conclusion that life is not a school. It's simply an opportunity. It's a platform, if you will. It's a contextual field that allows us to experience and to express who we really are, individuations of divinity.
So by living, we are, God is expressing itself and experiencing itself through each one of us and collectively. Is that correct?
That's my understanding. Through every sentient being in the cosmos, in the entire universe, that's my understanding.
Now, you've written about parenting, conversations with God, parenting, and even about otherworldly beings. With all the talk about disclosure nowadays, what did God tell you about non-human beings around the cosmos, if you will, and how we are interconnected as a family and an expression of spirit?
Oh, I was told that there are, of course, entities, sentient beings that live on other planets. He said, not just one or two planets, but many, 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 many planets. There are millions of planets in the universe, and we live in a universe of universes, I was also told. Not just one universe, we live in what we could call a multiverse. That is a series of universes, and there are sentient beings that live in other places in the universe. And many of those civilizations are highly advanced. They're far more advanced than we are here on Earth. And so God referred to those beings as HEBS, HEBS, highly evolved beings. And God sent me a list of 16 differences between human beings and highly evolved beings that live on other planets. And God said that there are even some HEBS, some highly evolved beings living on Earth and have lived on Earth during the history of your planet. But there are very rare, it's not the majority of people on your planet. Maybe you could number them, maybe 20 or 50 in the course of human history, but there are even one or two who are walking the planet today. I'm not pretending to be one of them. Let's get real clear on that. But there are some people on the planet right now who we could call highly evolved beings. So that's my understanding, is that there are highly evolved beings living throughout the cosmos.
Did he did not he did Source God give you any inclination as to how humanity and these HEBs may come together? Disclosure, would we be able to experience it anytime soon, or is time not an issue there?
Well, I asked God that question, and she said, Neil, I'm not going to give you predictions. I'm not going to tell you about your own future, because that would disrupt the evolutionary process. And as I want you to encounter the future as you co-create it and co-experience it with other members of your species on the planet that you inhabitate. So, God declined to offer predictions about what would happen or when it would happen. But she did say that there's no question that you will be contacted by and will make connections with beings from elsewhere.
Okay. My very special guest on Guys, Guys Radio, return guest. He's been on the show, I think, four times now, and it was kind of my first big get, if you will, as a podcaster and a radio show host. Neil Donald Walsh, famous for the book series Conversations with God. His new book is called Letters to a Young Seeker, The Parting Thoughts from an Elder. Over your time working with spirit in a direct sense, how has your understanding of God changed since you wrote the series, if at all?
It hasn't changed at all. My understanding of God is precisely as I have expressed my experience of it in those dialogue books.
Okay. What was the biggest, if any, what was the biggest like aha moment or surprise, you know, based on your, you know, human experience and what you thought about God and religion, whatever your training and teaching had been, versus what you learned about God through your conversations? What was the one thing that was most surprising to you when you kind of continued through your conversations with God?
What was most surprising is when God said to me, "Sweetheart, Neil, God's love is pure love, and pure love is not transactional." I said to God, "Okay, help me out. What do you mean? What do you mean pure love is not transactional?" God said, "It's not a transaction." He said, "Now, most human beings, not all human beings, but most human beings express and experience love as if it were a transaction. In other words, I'll give you this if you give me that. But if you stop giving me that, I won't give you this." But God's love is not like a trade deal between nations, one very powerful nation and one very small nation, where we demand certain things in response. And if we get what we demand, then we give you what you need. That God's love is not a transaction. God's love is pure love, which asks, requires, requests, and needs nothing in return.
Amazing.
I said, "Well, if I could just go on
sure,
just
please.
For a minute."
Sorry.
I said, "God, wait a minute. You need nothing in return? Everything that my religion told me when I was a child, and most of the world's religions, there are 4,000 religions now being practiced on the planet, 4,223 to be exact. And most of those religions teach of a God who does require certain things in order for us to get certain things in return. So, you know, we have been told that God is loving, for sure, but also judgmental. And if the judgment turns out to be not a good one, condemning. And if we are condemned, we will experience punishment, which you are told is everlasting damnation in what religions call the fires of hell." So the biggest surprise was when God said to me, "Neil, I don't judge anybody. I don't condemn anybody. And I don't punish anybody. There's no such place as hell. You made all of that up. You," meaning the human species, the people who wrote the earliest scriptures, assumed that God was made in the image and likeness of man. "I have told you that man is made in the image and likeness of God, but you've turned it around and you've made God in the image and likeness of man. And because human beings love each other transactionally, you assume that God loves you in the same way. I love you if." But Neil, there is no if to God's love. I don't love you if. I love you because you are my creation.
Okay. Before we move to the new book, I want to ask you about forgiveness then, because this came up when I've read your materials many times, that there's no need to really, and I put it into my own practice, my own life. Instead of saying you're sorry, because God doesn't need your doesn't need to forgive you and doesn't need you to be sorry. It's more about having gratitude for just being able to allow God to experience itself through you.
We should explain why God does not need to forgive you or to forgive anybody for anything.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is, when God explained it to me, seemed to be totally logical and totally understandable. God said, "Neil, sweetheart, you can't hurt, damage, injure or upset me, upset God in any way. God is the highest source of power in the universe. It's the creator of the universe. God is the all-in-all, the essential essence, the pure energy that we call pure love. And because you can't hurt me or destroy me or upset me or injure me or anger me or frustrate me in any way, and the reason you can't frustrate me in any way is because I don't need anything from you to be happy. You don't supply my happiness any more than a two-year-old child misbehaving at the dinner table would destroy your entire life. You don't say to a two-year-old child at the dinner table who deliberately misbehaves, you don't say, "It's okay, sweetheart. Grandpa forgives you." Because you understand that forgiveness is not part of the equation. Grandpa understands how a two-year-old could behave that way because she's 2 years old. Neil, God said to me, most members of your species are acting like two-year-olds. So I don't need to forgive you for anything, because understanding replaces forgiveness in the mind of the master. And when you apply that little piece of information in your own life, when you don't have to forgive anybody else for anything that you think they have done that has wronged you, and when you don't even have to forgive yourself for what you think you have done that was not okay, when you get to a place where you realize that understanding replaces forgiveness, you have moved to a place of spiritual mastery, and your whole life will change.
You wrote one of your books about parenting, Neil. And I'm a dad. I'm an older dad of a 12-year-old. He's going to turn 13. He's getting into a challenging phase. What advice do you have for today's parents in terms of the best way to kind of bring up their children in a loving way, not get triggered by things that they do? And kids are crazy to begin with, and a lot of fun, and they bring you so much joy and sometimes so much exasperation. What does God say about being a good parent?
Good parents allow their children to know that nothing stands in the way of their continued everlasting love. Good parents say to their children, "I love you," with three magic words. "I love you no matter what."
Beautiful, beautiful. Okay, the name of the new book, Letters to a Young Seeker, Departing Thoughts from an Elder. Who is a young seeker in the book? Are they literally young or symbolically young? Who are you referring to there?
No, I'm referring to literally young people. This is not a dialogue book. I should explain to people, this is not a conversation with God dialogue book. This is a book that takes 21 of the most important, what I consider to be the most important messages that I was given in my conversations with God, and puts them into each one into a separate short little letter, a very short letter. Mm-hmm. I mean, the letters are not really very long. They're only like 6 or 8 paragraphs long. But each letter contains one of those 21 important messages from conversations with God, and explains to a young person what it took me 50 years to come to understand. You know, I start the book by saying, if I had known when I was 21, or even 31, oh gosh, you know what, even 41. If I had known when I was a younger person what I know now, I would have hurt a lot fewer people in my life. I would have done a much better job of being a kind and loving, compassionate, caring, sensitive person. And I would have hurt myself a lot less as well if I had only known at 21 what I knew at 61 or even 51. So I decided, you know what? Put it in a book. So I put it in a small, short little book,
yes.
Short little letters, each letter containing one of the 21 most important messages. And then each letter followed by a poem.
Yes.
written by my lovely spouse, my wonderful life partner, who happens to be an award-winning poet. And so she said, you know what? I've got some poems that would go perfectly with these points that you're making in the book. So she turned, you know, she turned important messages into life-saving magic. Messages for the mind into messages for the heart through her poetry. So the book contains those 21 messages with 21 extraordinary poems that follow each message. And you know, it's a very thin book. I mean, you could
Yes.
read it, you know, in an hour and a half, and it's a perfect reading for a weekend.
So I read it over the last couple of days, and I jotted down some of the key findings, if you will. So let me toss a few of them your way, Neil. Nothing matters until you give meaning to it.
Yeah, that's one of the most important messages I ever received in my conversations with God. Specifically, God said to me, nothing has any meaning save the meaning you give it.
What does that mean?
It means exactly what it says. Nothing has any meaning except the meaning that you give it. So, you know, a person, there's a person who's having a big party at the end of, I'm going to use an example, having a big party at the weekend. And the guy across the street was invited, but I wasn't. Now, what does that mean? What does it mean that I wasn't invited, but the guy across the street was invited? Oh, it means that the person holding the party doesn't like me anymore. Oh, no, maybe it means that he doesn't think that I would enjoy the company that he's bringing together for his party. Maybe he thinks that I should. So nothing has any. So what I wound up realizing is that all the events of my life mean what I have said they mean. And two people can have two entirely different answers to the same question about what does that mean? What does that mean? You know, my wife and I have experienced this in our own life. We will both encounter a similar experience together, and I will have one idea about what it means, and she will have an entirely different idea about what it means.
Mm-hmm.
We look at each other and say, wow, isn't that interesting? Nothing has any meaning save the meaning you give it. Therefore, decide to give a different meaning to all the events of your life. Allow them to mean that they are simply opportunities. The events of your life, however positive or however negative, are simply opportunities for you to step forward in the process of the evolution of who you are.
Mm-hmm. Another overarching concept that seemed to come through, Neil, was about your having a positive intention impacts all the things you're going to go through. And if you can start in an area of a positive intention, regardless of what comes at you, your positive intention will give that situation, that experience, a positive meaning or something to that effect. Could you help me out with that?
Yes, yes. Your life is nothing but energy, of course. So everything that we do, think, and say is an energetic expression. And energy is an element of the universe that affects itself. Energy affects itself. So if you send positive energy in the universe, it will affect the energy that the universe holds and change that energy into a positive projection that is returned to you. So what goes about comes about. Life is a circle. And so that's what I've come to understand. So when I project positive energy in the space of life, no matter what, then life, it has the ability to turn around even the most negative outcomes, even the most negative experiences, and turn them into something that I can more easily and painlessly deal with.
So it sounds like if you have that positive intention and you're going to face experiences that they're not all going to be pleasant or positive on a surface, it seems like your intention going into each moment has an effect on what's coming at you that can kind of neutralize what may be seen initially as something negative.
Yes, that's exactly right. To put it in one sentence, God said to me, Neil, Life proceeds out of your intentions
Okay.
for it. Life proceeds out of your intentions for it. And you know what? That's been my experience for the past 35 years. I mean, since I turned 50 years old, that's been my experience. So when I have intentions for my life, that's how it turns out. For instance, I intended for this interview to be the worst time of my day. And
Thank you.
just having a little fun. And that's another intention, by the way. I do have that intention that I'm to be serious for a moment. I intend to be lighthearted in my life. And I want to bring humor to my life and to the lives of those whose life I touch. So I've discovered that laughter is the best, really, truly is the, I hate to be so trite, but laughter is the best medicine.
Now, another concept that you lean in on in the book is the law of opposites. And I think you gave the example of, if how do you know what it's like to be 6 foot tall if everything is so different? If everything was 6 feet tall from that perspective, it's good to have all these differences. That's a really positive thing, or something to that
Yes,
effect. Help me with that.
that's in letter number six in the book, which tells us the moment you declare yourself to be anything, successful, abundant, happy, content, whatever, its exact opposite will appear in your awareness. This is known as the law of opposites. And you've just described, but let me explain a little bit further why the law of opposites exists. Because I said to God, well, I don't understand. God said to Neil, let's use a metaphor. As a metaphor, if you decided that you are the light, we're speaking metaphorically now. So I said, just say that to yourself, I am the light. So if you are the light but you want to express and experience that, you'd be like a candle in the sun if there was no opposite. You'd be there with a billion kajillion other candles, but you couldn't experience yourself as an expression of the light, unless you were surrounded by what? Ah, the opposite of the light, which is the darkness, which is why every great spiritual master has said, raise not your fist to heaven and curse the darkness not, but be a light unto the darkness, that you might know who you really are, and that all those whose lives you touch might know who they really are as well. So now, whenever I have an idea about something, about who I am or what's going to happen, going to occur, I'm ready to encounter the opposite. But that doesn't mean that it has to happen in my own life. I simply need to have an awareness that the opposite exists in the universe in which I dwell. And when I become aware of the opposite, I can then deliberately and intentionally talk about intentions, choose that which I prefer, and not get thrown for a loss when the opposite might be raising its ugly head in my experience. So I don't find it unusual when the opposite of what I really wish and desire shows up, or when I learn about it somewhere else in the universe, I just accept it as part of a process that allows me to know who I really am. So I'm grateful. I'm grateful. I move into gratitude for the opposite. Thank you, God, for helping me to understand.
The notion of gratitude is something that and I got it from you, Neil, because the whole note, the idea about forgiveness and asking for forgiveness, I replaced that in my personal life based on your books with gratitude. So I start every day saying thank you for a roof over my head. Thank you for hot water. Thank you for the things that we take for granted. And
Exactly.
I have found it's really been helpful. It's just made each moment more positive by having that gratitude. And it's not sanctimonious. It's not propped up gratitude. It's real gratitude saying, wow, things could be a lot worse than they are. And I
And they
sometimes.
are a lot worse, by the way, for billions of people. There are 8 billion of us here,
Right.
more than 8 billion of us, and many of those people have nothing. We talk about a roof over your head or hot water. Do you realize that there are billions of people who right now, 2.5 billion people right now on the planet, that's a statistic, by the way, that's actual, do not even have toilets.
No, it's amazing.
They have to relieve themselves outside. Billions of people have not had a drop of fresh water in their entire lifetimes. So I'm sad to say that this is the experience that we've allowed ourselves to co-create collectively as a species on this planet. You would think that if we were an evolved species, we would never allow any one of our members to experience life in that way. But we do. We allow it to happen. That is, the largest number of us do. But there are a small number of human beings who have followed the wonderful injunction of Mr. Gandhi, who said, "Be the change you wish to see in the world."
So beautiful. Last question for you, Neil. And this is just my question. Over the years, you've had this conversations with God, you've had a relationship, and now you're in your early 80s. How do you communicate with God now on a daily basis? And what advice would you give for everybody out there listening and watching in terms of how best to connect with the God within and the God, the omnipresent God energy.
How I communicate with the God that exists every day is by simply talking to him. I just ask her what I want to ask her. I tell him what I would like to experience. I just simply talk to him in a way that's not much different than the way I'm talking to you. I just talk to God. I say, "Hey, God, help me with this," or "Bring me some insight about that," or "Can you help me understand, what's going on here?" Or, what is it about this present experience that I'm not fully aware of?" Or, I just talk to God, and I ask God for help and for guidance and for assistance and for the energetic of pure love.
Ask you a question here, just as a follow-up, because you've had the experience of God speaking directly through you to write these books. For a lot of us, they feel that they're reaching out to God, but they either do not know how to take the information in that they're receiving from God, or that they feel that they're just not getting through. What advice would you have for people out there who aren't in a position like you are, where you got books channeled kind of through you? And they want to have a relationship with God.
I would say, listen to your highest and most positive and grandest feelings. Do not reject your most wonderful feelings about anything, about any person, about any event, about any circumstance, or about yourself. Especially, don't reject the most wonderful feelings you ever had about yourself. Most people reject their own feelings about themselves if they're very, very positive, because they don't want to, be accused of being ego-filled or a narcissist or whatever words we come up with. So, the advice I would give people is ask yourself the question, what would happen if the grandest thought I ever had about me, if the most wonderful thought I ever had about my life, if the most wonderful thought I ever had about God, what would my life be like if my most wonderful thoughts were true after all is said and done? And I said to God, "But you know what? When I was having this conversation with God, I said to God, but some of those ideas I have about all this are too good to be true. Especially my thoughts I have about you, God, they're almost like too good to be true. You never judge, you never punish, you never condemn anyone, you never stop loving anybody for any reason whatsoever, and you never deny for any reason entry into heaven for anyone at all, no matter how they've lived their life. It's too good to be true. I have a hard time accepting these ideas about God because they're too good to be true." And you know what she said to me? "Neil," God said, "sweetheart, if God can't be too good to be true, who can?"
Fantastic. A perfect way to end our conversation, which I wish we could just keep going, but we have a time constraint here. Letters to a Young Seeker, Departing Thoughts from an Elder, Neil Donald Walsh, his latest book. It's got beautiful poems, 21 lessons. Thank you so much for coming back to Guys Guys Radio. Again, you've been very important to me, your work, and also the fact that you were the first kind of big name, if you will, to come on my show, and it's really made a difference. And you've been an inspiration for me ever since. And even before I met you, just reading your books, it's changed my life. So thank you so much. God bless you for everything you've done. Keep doing what you're doing, and I hope I'll see you again.
Thank you, my friend. It's lovely to have spent this time with you.
My pleasure. Thank you, Neil.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, what a wonderful way to celebrate our 700th episode of Guys Guys Radio then, with an incredible spiritual teacher, one of the best ever, Neil Donald Walsh of the Conversations with God series. I'm so delighted he joined us again today and for this show, and he is such a gentleman, and his message is more true now, I think, than it's ever been, and it's all about finding the God within and working to do positive things. And that's what we try to do here on Guys Guys Radio. We really try to bring positive information and new information and things for you to consider. And I am so appreciative of all my guests of the 700 episodes, and particularly of you, my wonderful and growing audience who's supported us along the way. And hopefully you've gotten a lot out of the show, and there's a lot more to come right here on Guys Guys Radio. Okay, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Guys Guys Radio on UK Health Radio. We're back next week with another great show. And until then, like I always say, guys, finish first.